Hello, my name is Chip Lang. You are listening to Total EM. This podcast is one that I've been wanting to do with Kevin Clower for a long time. In fact, we had a podcast before that I wanted to record, but the audio quality just went straight to hell and there was no way to save it. So I was able to get him back on and we actually have a special recording here. This is very rapid fire and I do want to apologize because we did have some audio quality issues this time. At least it was salvageable for the most part. So when you hear a few things, I apologize in advance, but this was well worth keeping the audio because it was just such good content. So without further ado, let's get it going with Kevin Clower.
First off, just for a brief introduction for the probably few people out there who don't know who you are.
Sure. Well, I'm Kevin Clower. I'm an emergency physician. I work for Team Health. I'm the chief medical officer for the Division of Emergency Medicine and also the chief risk officer for the organization and the executive director of their patient safety organization.
And you do a lot of public speaking events. In fact, we met at SIMPA and you did an amazing talk there. If people haven't met you before and listened to one of your talks, they'd have to go because it's just so perfect. But we talked some there and we actually covered some different topics as far as like documentation and watching for high-risk diagnoses. And we recently had Mike Weinstock on to talk about how to develop your MDM and how the MDM can help you so much. Well, we had a lot of great feedback from that. More people wanted to hear more along the same kind of topic. One of the first questions that a lot of people ask with documentation is, what are some high-yield parts of the documentation? What are some high-yield items or things that would basically help reduce medical legal risk? And I know that's a big question.
It is a big one. First, I'll say I'm sure you got great insight and information from Mike Weinstock. And Michael Weinstock and I have been great friends for a long time. And we published two of the three Bounce Backs books together, and we're working on a third one right now. So I'll try and add to what I think he might say, but I'm sure it was a great interview and great discussion with him. But I will tell you, the chart is really created for three reasons. It's for continuity of care to document what you've done. It's for billing and that purpose, and it's also for a risk management document. So when you look at high-yield things that are really helpful, you want to make sure that you are clearly documenting your thought process. And you want to make sure, I would say, it's one thing I like to think about, and I want you to think about this as well when you're documenting your records, document for the miss. What I mean is you're never trying to misdiagnose anyone, but if you're sending somebody home with a headache, if you do inadvertently overlook something, what might that thing be? If it's related to trauma, then it's probably an intracranial injury of some kind. If it's related to just a headache and it's a more severe type of headache, but you think it's not significant, you're going to send them home, could you miss an ischemic stroke that's associated with cranial cervical dissection, or is it a subarachnoid hemorrhage? Then speak to those points. Document to the miss.
Obviously, the MDM plays a role in making sure you put an appropriate physical exam. We've talked about this before in the past, but for example, if you have a patient who comes in with some sort of vertigo symptoms or lightheaded or those types of things, or maybe things that if I wasn't in the room with you, I'd wonder, well, why didn't you do a more thorough neuro exam? And if I remember right from one of your talks was that we under document, like for example, the neuro exam, which is something that is high yield and something very important to actually do and make sure you're charting.
You're exactly right. And I'll give you two points here that if there is a neurological complaint of any type, headache, dizziness, anything that could be neurological, the preponderance of your documentation should reflect the neurological problem. So you should make sure you have a very good neuro exam. If somebody comes in with an ankle sprain, well, you don't need necessarily an exhaustive neuro exam. You need a reasonably complete neuro exam that shows that you looked for other things that could be going on, but you don't need to spend the kind of time in that system that you would on the musculoskeletal system. So it's really, really important to make sure that you're documenting in the area that you are really focused on and the chief complaint is focused on. What the second point I want to make is just because the etiology of the symptoms are clear to you at presentation. This frequently happens with stroke cases. You see somebody with a left MCA distribution stroke and they have right-sided weakness. It's obvious. It seems bizarre after the fact, but it's very understandable that when you look at the record, the neuro exam is incomplete because when you're looking at the patient, it's obvious. but that doesn't translate over to the medical record unless you put it in the medical record. And if there is a bad outcome and you're challenged on it later, your documentation in a stroke with a bad outcome looks horrific because you didn't even do a complete neuro exam, despite the fact that you thought it wasn't necessary because it was an obvious presentation of stroke.
Is it sometimes that it's related to maybe they're so altered I didn't think I could do a proper exam, at least document the reason why you didn't do certain portions because the patient either wouldn't comply or maybe you couldn't get anything? Like, it's not necessarily a positive or negative, it's just simply I could not perform that part of the exam. Is that an acceptable alternative at times?
It is, and I already knew that you were a brilliant guy, but this just speaks to that point. So when you start to document what you're doing in your medical record, but there's certain things you would normally do for a patient, but you can't, either because the acuity is too high and you need to move on to more important things, or because there are certain circumstances such as the patient's mental status that won't allow you to get a good exam, or history that you would normally obtain. It's incumbent upon you to make sure that your record reflects why you couldn't take care of this patient in the way that you normally would. It's not bad care. It's showing why you're providing good care, but you didn't take the steps you normally would because they weren't possible or they weren't actually in the patient's best interest.
Something to tie into this too that I wonder about, and I know some people sometimes use as an argument, is they may leave out portions of their exam, or maybe they're not as detailed in that as that is normally for them, but they say, well, normally I have a standard approach to how I do X, Y, or Z. Maybe instead of the neuro exam in this case, it may be a certain procedure, but they don't leave all the details into the procedure. How defensible is that, and how appropriate is that to only document and then say my usual technique or whatever later on, or maybe even in the chart you say in my usual technique, this is what I did?
Well, I mean, I think you can, whether it's a discussion about what your thinking was. So for instance, I don't think this is appendicitis. That's enough. It'd be great if you added a little bit more, but if you can say, well, I have a standard decision-making process I go through, and now I will outline that for you, you can reflect back on it. But if you don't even talk about it, you can never go back to those breadcrumbs that take you back to your decision-making, which is really critical. And I think for a procedure note, well, even from a coding and billing standpoint, you got to make sure you have everything in there you want. So you don't want to cut too many corners there. But clearly in your medical decision-making, and particularly in informed discussions and or shared decision-making conversations, but then leave the detail for later when you want to speak to it in more detail if you're asked to. So if someone says, well, how do you know you talked to the patient about the potential for appendicitis and they were going to go home with abdominal pain? Because I always talk to my patients about the possibility of missed appendicitis when they have undifferentiated abdominal pain and they're going home. That is a very credible statement. And I think sometimes our documentation is lacking because I think a lot of clinicians, PAs, advanced practice nurses, and physicians feel like it's a barrier to doing these things because they think they have to document volumes. You don't. Leave yourself the breadcrumbs. Recognize what those breadcrumbs mean to you, meaning what did you actually talk about? And you can go back to them at a later time and emphasize what you actually covered.
Perfect pearls there. So now we got to talk about one other thing that I'm sure people also wonder about with the HPI. I have some people who, when they document the HPI, and assuming they document it appropriately, where they're actually focused on the history of present illness, sometimes it seems to be more about history, or it doesn't seem to always include the present illness. But when they do put everything correctly, the patient makes certain statements. Quotations. Some people love them. Some people hate using them entirely, and they don't want any quotations in their chart. Where does it actually help you to keep things in quotes, or can you kind of paraphrase what patients say and it still is beneficial? Where do we fall in that? How much of that documentation should we use in that sense?
That's a good question, and I'll be honest with you, I haven't had that question before, but I'll tell you, the only time I think actually quoting the patient would be beneficial is when they are planning on either giving you information that's distinctly different than you expected to receive, or they're planning on not following the recommendations that you have. It's not adversarial, but if you're recommending admission to them and the patient says, well, I don't want to be admitted, you could say they declined admission. But I tell you, I remember a case that I had several years ago where I recommended an admission for a gentleman with chest pain, and he declined. And he said, listen, I know you're telling me I should be admitted. He had 10 minutes worth of chest pain. He was a smoker. I was concerned, but not overly concerned. But what we do with a patient With his risk factors and his presentation would have been an overnight observation admission to rule him out. And I told him all that. And I said, you know, there's a small chance you could die from this. He said, listen, if I'm going to die, I want to die at home with my boys. Do you know what he did? 24 hours later, he died at home with his boys. I was surprised because I really wasn't overly concerned, but I wasn't going to veer off the path that we normally take with a given presentation. That statement was in quotes in that record. But I think if it's a general standard run-of-the-mill piece of history, I think you can just paraphrase without any difficulty at all. The reason I quoted that is I thought it was really actionable. I really thought he should stay. And this is exactly his statement. And it's not paraphrasing. And I thought it was important to include it.
Well, and in that particular case, that's like a really good example, because not only does it include what he said and the fact that he declined, but it's such a unique statement that it's something that's going to be hard to question. Dr. Clower, you just made that up. You didn't actually say that. No, we know he's had his boys and everything like that. And this is what he said. This is a very reasonable and assumed statement to be true. It's hard to make something like that up. So I think that's another unique part of that. I really like using the quotes in that case. Other cases where I've seen it used, and I personally have used this, are with psychiatric cases. People who say bizarre comments that make me think that this is an acute psychosis event. And so that's probably the most common place I've used the quotations the most, or I'll just quote whole sentences or phrases.
No, I agree. And it goes back to the former comment that I made, that if something is worded in an unusual way that is very, very important, then quotes are invaluable. They're very important. So let's say somebody just said, I don't want to be admitted. Well, you can just say they declined admission. But this guy made a very, very important statement. And just like you said, your patients that you evaluated with mental health problems may have stated something very unique and specific that might change your medical decision making than quoting it. So it really reflects that you took a careful approach to getting the history, and the way they phrased their response to you did modify your actions. It's really important. But general run-of-the-mill responses in a history don't need to be quoted.
One other question with that, if say there is an appropriate phrase to quote, and I think we'll have to have a whole separate conversation with this about when it gets to argumentative patients and how do you protect yourself in those ways, because I think that's a whole case in itself. But if certain patients use certain language, so if they're cursing at you, do you actually put the curse words in quotations? Do you leave them out? Because to me, it's part of, if this is what they said, this is exactly what they said, and we should leave it in this part of the documentation, wherever that documentation may fall.
Well, I would never put profanity in the record. If you have to produce this record later, you're the one that produced it. You could paraphrase. You could say that they used the F word. There are other ways to get the point across other than believing you have the right to swear in your record because someone else said it and you don't have any accountability for it because you put it in quotes. That doesn't play well from a professionalism standpoint, so I would not put the actual words in the record and resist the temptation to do that and sensationalize what was said.
Sounds fair. All right. I know you're busy and you're going to have to go soon, but I have one more question as far as the keys, parts of the documentation and key pearls from it. Discharge instructions. This is something that I feel like some people, they go into a lot of detail. Some people, they hardly mention anything. It's just the classic, two phrases, follow up with your PCP and then return for new or worsening symptoms. When you put those types of phrases or other things in there, is that something defensible? Is that something that is actionable in a sense? And you can just say, well, I told them to follow up with their PCP and I told them return for new or worsening symptoms. Or should I also put things like I do in my MDM where we had a more detailed discussion? So maybe the discharge instructions are basically a concise description of those things that we went through.
A couple critical points that I would recommend with discharge or aftercare instructions are, first of all, you want to provide timed specific follow-up when you can. So we want you to follow up in 2 days or 3 days, and we want you to follow up with this person. If you don't feel that they can get into that person, it's immaterial to your recommendation. If they can't, then they should come back to you or they should go somewhere else, but your recommendation needs to be very clear. It can't be just follow up if you don't get better, or follow up in a week or two and be nebulous, because it's really not giving the patient reasonable direction. And I would also say that we need to make sure that they're very aware that they can come back if they get worse. It's not a passive statement. If you are not getting better and you're concerned about anything, I want you to come back here. It's not just the discharge instructions. I think you need to state it. And the other question that I would have, it's a hypothetical or rhetorical question, is whose discharge instructions are they? Are they yours to the patient or are they the nurse's? Well, they're shared. But what oftentimes happens is we don't discuss them with the patient. We allow the nurse to do that, and we are not available for questions at that point. So here, in summary, is what I would do. Talk about the plan with the patient. So you were here for this. To the best of our ability, this is what we think is going on, and here's what I'd like to do. Have you follow up with your doctor tomorrow, recheck your abdominal pain. I got you something for pain, something for nausea. I don't think it's this, but here are my concerns. What do you think about this plan? Are you okay with this plan? Yeah, that sounds fine, and you'll come back if you get worse. Yeah, I'll come back. That's what I want you to do, no matter what time, day or night. Come back, and we'll take care of you. No problem. Patient comfortable with the aftercare plan. Something like that in your chart that shows the breadcrumbs again, that you actually talked to them about the plan and they were comfortable with it. Having a signature on the discharge instructions does not imply that they had acceptance and knowledge of the true plan. So you have to take it upon yourself as the primary clinician to make sure the plan works for them and they understand it. You don't have to spend a lot of time, but you do have to spend the due time to make sure that patients understand what you're expecting, the limitations of the evaluation and the treatment that they received, and when to come back, and they're always welcome to come back.
Well, Kevin, I think those are all excellent pearls, and I think that's a perfect one to end on as far as the discharge instructions and calling it a day on this topic. I want to thank you so much for coming on. And just as quick aside, do you have any other comments you'd like to add right now?
Well, I would just say that, you know, you've been kind enough to ask me my perspectives. And from a risk management perspective, I hope I've given some guidance that's meaningful to someone, and hopefully to everyone. At least one piece of information that they heard today will be valuable to them. But there are many ways to do this. These are just my perspectives. They're not necessarily realizable to everyone and shouldn't be considered the only way to accomplish documenting a good record. But hopefully, as I mentioned before, hopefully there are some pearls in here that'll help you take better care of your patients tomorrow than you did yesterday. So thanks for the time, Chip. Really appreciate it.
Thank you, and would love to have you back on soon.
Would love to be back.
All right, and that wraps up the podcast with Kevin Clower. I did not get to give him the tagline like I normally do, so Kevin, if you're listening, I owe you one. But hopefully Kevin's going to join us again here in the future, maybe talk about some more details, which reminds me, if you like something from the podcast, you want us to go over this more, please let me know, because I am definitely always interested in getting the feedback. But until next time, continue to provide total care everywhere.